was the night before Christmas in the Bear's treehouse home when they read of Saint Nicholas in a beloved old poem. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and last week, boy, oh boy, did you people like that one. You know, if you were here last week with us, if you listened to last week's episode on the Berenstain Bears and the Nutcracker, you got to hear me just sort of get lost in the weeds for a while while I discussed the history of the Nutcracker. And I was thinking, it sure is a shame that I didn't go into the history of nutcrackers, like the actual figural objects, the nutcracker itself, like the little soldier with the hinged jaw that cracks nuts. Like, where do those things even come from? Like, why do we have those? Why do they look like soldiers? And so for the next hour and a half, I'm kidding. I'm done with nutcrackers. I did get a lot of positive responses last week on getting lost in the weeds about a topic that had nothing to do with the Berenstain Bears directly. So I'm also kidding about that. Nobody told me they liked that. Nobody told me they liked that at all. But nobody told me they didn't like that. And so this week, we are taking a look at 2013's The Berenstain Bears, possessive, Night Before Christmas, a book in which the Bear family reads 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, or A Visit from St. Nicholas, or an edited version of A Visit from St. Nicholas, because it's really truncated, by Mike Berenstain. Yes, this is a solo book by Mike Berenstain based on the characters created by Stan and Jan Berenstain. Before we get into the Berenstain Bears' Night Before Christmas, let's talk a little bit about the poem, The Night Before Christmas, or, as it is properly known, A Visit from St. Nicholas. And if we're really gonna get into A Visit from St. Nicholas, we're gonna have to get a little bit into St. Nicholas. So let's do a little dive, a little deep dive. Ask any expert on folklore. Where does Santa Claus originate? What are the origins of Santa Claus? Why do we have this American version of Santa Claus? And how did he become so prevalent around the world? And you will get a different answer depending on which scholar you ask. Ask about the history of A Visit from St. Nicholas, and you will get a different answer depending on which literary scholar you ask. Ask about the history of the Dutch in New York State, and you're going to get a different answer depending on which historian you ask. And these things are all tied together. Santa Claus, as he is known around the world, is a product of America, but he is also a product of Europe, of European tradition, which goes back to early Christian tradition, which goes even further back to pre-Christian holidays and celebrations and the personification of Yule, of Yule time, of the Yuletide, and all of these traditions. I mean, if you've talked to a single college student in your life, you've heard the, well, actually, most of the things we celebrate, I think I did this impression last episode. Most of the things we celebrate around Christmas time have pre-Christian origins. Yes, yes, we know. We know that the Christmas tree has pre-Christian origins. We know that most of this stuff does because people created things before other people created things. But it all coalesced. It all coalesced into this thing, this concept, this notion of a character named Santa Claus. And that's what A Visit from St. Nicholas is all about. So the reason A Visit from St. Nicholas is so fascinating to me and to other people is because it appeared at this crux, this like historical moment where the notion of the jolly man who brought you gifts was undergoing a massive transformation from whatever its actual origins were. I'm not going to get too specific because we could be here literally four episodes and episodes talking about this. I find it so friggity flippin' fascinating. But the long and short of it is that Saint Nicholas was actually a saint. It's not hard to understand, whose saint day was December 6th, still is, I guess, and gradually, this actual saint, Saint Nicholas, who was kind of the saint of children and students, he was known for like saving the lives of children, or like he resurrected like murdered children. He also brought like little gifts to the poor, to poor kids. He was kind of the patron saint of kids and many other things. If you look up Saint Nicholas, most saints are the patron saints of just a ton of stuff. They accrue things that they're, I mean, repentant thieves, pawnbrokers, brewers, merchants, archers. It goes on and on. But if you look at old pictures of St. Nicholas, the notion of St. Nicholas, he was this guy in red robes with a big white beard. I mean, that's just what he was known as. Gradually, the guy St. Nicholas morphed into a character based on St. Nicholas. And this character you may have heard of, and his name is Sinterklaas, which is Dutch for Saint Nicholas. Like it's a corruption of Saint Nicholas. It's he's also known as the Sint, de Gode Sint, the good saint, the good holy man, Sinterklaas, or Sinterklaus, or Saint Nikolai, or Kleschen, or Ziniklos. Like just depending on what country, but if you notice, these are all like. You know, these are all like Germanic languages. I don't know anything about languages, but it's from a very specific area in Europe. But Sinterklaas is generally thought of as a Dutch character. So Sinterklaas is kind of how people just refer to this guy. And if you look at pictures of Sinterklaas, it's Saint Nicholas. Like it's a guy in a bishop's hat, bishop's robes, huge white beard, riding a white horse. And this is a character. So this guy, Sinterklaas, isn't actually Saint Nicholas. This is a folkloric character who has origins in St. Nicholas. So if you see him and you see pictures of him, you can kind of see, okay, I get this. Like, it's sort of like if someone took Santa Claus and was like, what if Santa Claus existed in the real world? And they did like a deviant art of that. And like, he might look like this, Sinterklaas. But that's backwards of what I actually have. So this is Sinterklaas. Sinterklaas has a lot of traditions in Europe, but most of those didn't. A lot of those didn't come over to America. So what happened was the Dutch, obviously, founded New Amsterdam, which then became New York once the British took over. But the Dutch were always still around, kind of put down. Like the Dutch were treated not great, and they faced a lot of discrimination. The Dutch kind of became the butt of jokes, people talking in fake accents. You'll find a lot of humor around the era based on making fun of the Dutch. And it's mostly because people are mean and terrible and horrible people. But Sinterklaas has a festival that started, I mean, it starts in November, and then like Sinterklaas arrives. He's coming from like Spain, I think, and he comes in on a white horse, and he shows up in town, and there are celebrations, and he's attended by his buddies, known as we'll just call him Pete. That's just the night. Pete didn't come to America. We're not going to worry about Pete. We left him in Europe. So Sinterklaas, he comes from Spain, and people sing Sinterklaas songs, and they celebrate him, and then leading up to his day, Sinterklaas goes around and he visits hospitals and schools and areas, giving out like little trinkets and gifts. And then kids put out their shoes, right? So they put their shoes out. I believe they put them out to give food and water to his horse. And then if they leave this stuff for the horse, then they'll find a little trinket in their shoe. And hooray, like a little trinket or chocolate coins or a chocolate letter, like the first letter of their name, which is interesting and might have ties with like old pre-Christian traditions. And then on a St. Nicholas Eve, that's when like Sinterklaas gifts are given. And then in some traditions, then on Christmas Eve, that's when you get like the big gifts. Like that's when you get like the full family celebration. In some places, Sinterklaas is for the kids and Christmas is for the adults is another way I've read about it. Like I mean, obviously like this stuff has changed a lot over hundreds of years, changed a lot from country to country, changed a lot when the immigrants came and these different traditions just get translated differently depending on who is doing them. But, that's more or less Sinterklaas. He's just a guy in red with a big beard, and there was no, like, ho-ho-ho or anything. But what happened is, okay, so the Dutch are in America, right? And around the time of the Revolutionary War, there start to be reports that the character of Sinterklaas, St. Nicholas, the name starts getting corrupted. Well, this may have happened before, but we have print proof that the name St. Nicholas, Sinterklaas, is becoming corrupted into other variations. And the first print proof we have of this is from 1773 that says, last Monday, the anniversary of Saint Nicholas, otherwise called Saint A. Claus, was celebrated at Protestant Hall. So you have, it's Saint, like S-T period, lowercase a, Saint A, Saint A. Claus. And you'll start finding now the name spelled Sonderklaus, Sonterklaus, in many different ways. I think it's all phonetic. Like people were just started spelling Sinterklaas in different ways, depending on their accents and depending on just how they heard it and wrote it down. This is where the Santa Claus thing starts coming up. In 1821, in New York, there was a poem published in just a little chapbook called Old Santa Claus with Much Delight. Santa Claus is spelled S-A-N-T-E-C-L-A-U-S, all one word, Santa Claus, which is obviously a corruption of Sinterklaas. This is one of the earliest printed works with this character, delivering his gifts on Christmas Eve, as opposed to December 5th or December 6th. He's also the first depiction of him being pulled in a sleigh by reindeer, because traditionally Sinterklaas came in a horse. Now all of a sudden he's being depicted with reindeer. The whole like chimney things, usually he was just dropping presents down the chimneys. This starts developing as well. Also, it's one of the first depictions of the character not wearing bishop's robes. And this one, he's just wearing a red coat with a hat, not a Santa Claus hat, but a Cossack hat, like a big like fur hat. And his sleigh is green and has a letter S on the front, which I thought was pretty cool. Also, it's on a rooftop. So there's no indication that the reindeer flew in this poem, Old Sinterklaas. And it's mostly a poem about like Sinterklaas leaving switches so parents can beat their naughty children, which is kind of a thing that like Sinterklaas's friends, Pete, did, or Krampus, you may have heard of, the demon Krampus, Père Fouettard is another one. Like there's all these like, so sort of like impish, gnomish, unpleasant like hangers-on that, you know, like Sinterklaas would have with him to beat children or put children in sacks and take them to Spain. It was really weird. So around this time, the character is already becoming corrupted or changing. Now, okay, so we have that. And then we have the poem. A Visit from St. Nicholas was published for the first time in the Troy Sentinel in 1823, and it was published anonymously. They had a little paragraph that went with it that basically said, like, we don't know who wrote this poem about this Saint Nicholas, but it's cool, it's fun, and here it is. And they published, and it was called Account of a Visit from Saint Nicholas. If you'll bear with me, I'm going to read the original poem and sort of like we'll go along as we go. Here we go. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and already you're hooked, because this is a children's poem, begins with the word "twas." 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all throw the house. That's not through, throw, T-H-R-O, apostrophe. When all throw the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that Saint Nicholas soon would be there. So we see already that we have a middle-class family here. These are not stockings hung on the children's beds. This is a house with children in one room, adults in the other room, and a chimney, like a full fireplace. So what I love about this is, because of when it's set, like because it's in the early 1820s, and we know that the tradition of Sinterklaas is still fresh in people's heads, like the character of Santa, this is not a poem about Santa Claus, but it's a popular poem written for a popular printing, and it assumes that you already know who this guy is. Like it's not telling you this is what Saint Nicholas does; it's simply telling you this is. You know, sort of it describes the lesser known things, but the kids, you should be familiar with hanging up your stockings and getting ready to have gifts. So the children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And mama in her kerchief, or mama, do you say mama or mama? Not sure. And I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. And as a child, I always loved settled our brains. I was never a big, because a lot of kids' versions will just say had just settled down for a long winter's nap, which actually fits the meter a bit better. had the children were nestled all snug in their beds. Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. Had just settled our brains for a long... It's really weird that he put settled our brains. So I always wonder, like, was there a reason behind this? Was that an inside joke? Was that something he always said with his wife? Who knows? When out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter, I sprung from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window, I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. Here's the lines that always threw me as a kid, because I did not get what this meant. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. What an evocative... little rhyming couplet that is. It means nothing to children. Luster, midday, breast, snow. What is any of that? When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. Okay, as far as I can tell, this is our first indication that there are 8 reindeer on pulling the sleigh. And they're on the snow. They are not coming from the sky. They are being driven with a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be Saint Nick. I find referring to Saint Nicholas as Saint Nick interesting, because Nick is also a nickname for the devil. And there is something devilish, not in a Judeo-Christian sense, but in a old world sense, like a gnome or a sprite. And that will be evoked later on in the poem as well. It must be Saint Nick. Here's a line that, wow, more rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on, and here is my sticking point, I love this so much, Dunder and Blixem, not Donner and Blitzen. And I know that there have been many things written in popular culture in the last 10 years or so, people talk about Dunder and Blixem. I love the names Dunder and Blixem. Donner and Blitzen are nice names, but Dunder and Blixem are onomatopoeic. They come from the Dutch words for thunder and lightning. And wow, like that's a powerful name for a reindeer. So if people ever say Donner and Blitzen, correct them. Be that person. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. And first of all, I don't know what that means, dash away all, but I do know that to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, is just this little old man in a sleigh pulled by reindeer saying, jump up on the roof. And they do. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. Wow. So up to the housetop, the coursers they flew. With the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. These guys hauled up not only a bucket of toys, they hauled up this little old man. That's amazing. So we're introducing elements to the story now. We're introducing the reindeer show up riding on the snow. Then they jump up on the house. That's incredible. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. So he wasn't coming in the door. Traditionally, you would see St. Nicholas coming into the door, like magically opening a door, sometimes dropping gifts down the chimney. Nope, this dude is coming down the chimney. This is established right now. Boom, he lands, he hits. It's 1823 and our little minds they're just blown. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot. Keep that in mind. He's not wearing just a traditional Santa suit. He is dressed all in fur. And his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. He's been down a lot of chimneys. A bundle of toys was flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his sack. Pack, sorry, pack. Not a sack, it's his pack. It's a bundle of toys flung on his back. He looked like a peddler just opening his pack. So it may not even be a huge, like, Hessian bag, like he's traditionally. Maybe it's like a huge backpack or something. I don't know. Like, I don't know. What do peddlers carry all their stuff on? It's just this huge bundle on his back. His eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose, like a cherry. Keep these descriptions in mind because we're going to loop back on all the ways this guy has been described right now. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow, because besides the beard, this does not sound like St. Nicholas has been described. This is not Sinterklaas. Keep that in mind. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. Those two lines never appear in children's versions of this anymore. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. Okay, so we have this little old man with bright, bright cheeks and nose. He's smiling. He's impish. He's got a big, big shaken belly. He is mirthful. He's smoking. He was chubby and plump. A right jolly old elf. Bam. And there we have it. Suddenly we see the split. Like dunder and blixum from out of the sky, we have lightning hitting this character, and he's split in two. On one side is Sinterklaas, the saint, the savior of children, the kindly old gent who rides in on his horse through the snow and delivers presents to good little kids. On the other side, we have this other figure. Who is he? We're getting to him. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. So there's something about his presence. Unlike Sinterklaas, there's something about this guy's presence who doesn't inspire awe. He inspires joy. Like, you see him and you feel good about seeing this guy, right? A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work. And again, his work has to be familiar to the children that are reading this and the families who are reading it to them for you to know what he's doing, right? So this is not like, who is this guy? Kids know who he's talking about. He's just filling in some of the details. And filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, J-I-R-K, I love, and laying his finger aside of his nose, he's doing that thing like, you know what's up, and giving a nod, yeah, up the chimney he rose. How did he do it? Doesn't say he climbed, just right up the chimney. He sprung to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. And it says they flew, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they took off into the sky like we think of now. It could just mean that they flew as in they went away very quickly, like, because we know they arrived on the snow. And that they had to jump up on the roof. So they probably went back down to the ground and just zipped right off. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight. Again, he's not flying out of sight. He's driving out of sight. Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night. The classic lines. Classic lines. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight. Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night. And sometimes you'll see it written as, but I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight. But I like the fact that it's more like it gives a sense of urgency to it, because I heard him saying just before I lost sight of him, Happy Christmas, all. Yeah, take it easy. And that's it. So we have this split. We have this guy who's in your house. You can see half the influence of the Sinterklaas character. But who is this other character? Let's go back to pre-Christian times to a jolly old elf, a fat, bearded man of plenty, who we call Father Christmas. Of course, he wasn't always called Father Christmas. The Father Christmas character goes back. Goes way back. Way, way, way back. To a much, much deeper folkloric tradition in England. We're talking like Arthurian, pre-Arthurian legends. To midwinter celebrations. So midwinter celebrations have been going on since before recorded history. We just know they existed. Like, people have always, again, we talked about this around Halloween. People always have big parties when in the dead of winter. Why? It's a way of seeing in the new year. It's a way of saying this too shall pass. It's also a way of shouting at the skies and saying, you can't kill us, dudes. You can't. It's dark all the time. It is freaking cold and everything's dead. But you know what? We're here. We're happy. We're celebrating. We're going to eat, drink, and be merry. It's important for our survival. And there was this character, Father Christmas, Sir Christmas, depends on who you want, whatever you want to call him, Père Noël. He was the personification of the Yuletide, the personification later of Christmas, but really the personification of the Horn of Plenty, all that is good, jolly, holly, merriment, and merrymaking, the goodness of humanity, the notion that we will get through this. And you would have these massive celebrations, these Father Christmas celebrations. He was the king of Christmas, and these were specifically for adults. Like, these were not children's celebrations. This was drinking and other things, and it went on for days and days and days. You want to talk about the 12 days of Christmas? This is your 12 days of Christmas right here. On and off, Father, these Christmas celebrations were banned and then reestablished and then banned and then reestablished by the church, various churches, various popes. It goes on and on and on. When you think of Father Christmas, think of the ghost of Christmas present from A Christmas Carol. The guy in green robes, sitting atop the Horn of Plenty, just who Scrooge sees and just immediately gets happy. This guy who's just like goodness and jollity, but also seriousness, because he wants you to be a good person. And if you're not a good person, you're not doing it right. A Father Christmas has been depicted in woodcuts and wood carvings for centuries, sometimes as a doddering old man, sometimes as a hunchback, sometimes grotesquely, sometimes looking a lot like a bishop. He was in Mummer's plays, so like that's kind of where he got like really popular, was these like plays that people would, you know, he was a stock character in Mummer's plays. Sometimes he was like hideously deformed. Sometimes he was like big and fat. Sometimes he was more of a Falstaffian character. Sometimes more of like a Pan character, but definitely evoking this older England, this green man, the world, this like connection to the earth, connection to pre-Christian gods and satyrs pan flute playing, and oh my god, I'm lost in the woods and I just stepped into a fairy ring. Like, there's that evocation of the character. And so when you're looking at Santa Claus, what you're seeing now in A Visit from St. Nicholas, you're seeing this split between the piety and goodness of Sinterklaas and the jolliness and goodwill of Father Christmas. A lot of reasons are given for why we went with Sinterklaas and not Father Christmas. And one of the reasons, and there's no proof of this, but one of the theories is that post 1776, after the Revolutionary War, we were looking for a lot of non-British folklore, non-British traditions to celebrate, because we were tired of the British. And so we were latching on to Dutch traditions and Italian traditions. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why we celebrate, or used to celebrate, Columbus so much. It wasn't because the guy did anything that really stood out, but was because he wasn't British. And so we sort of latched on to this non-British guy because, hey, he did something we can talk about. But let's look up Father Christmas. There, he just goes on and on, on and on and on. And for many years, late into the 19th century, even into the 20th century, Father Christmas was a separate character from Santa Claus. Like, they existed simultaneously for a long time. There was America's Santa Claus, Britain's Father Christmas. Father Christmas wasn't even a gift giver. He was a merrymaker. He was a celebrator. He was tied in with adults. But Santa Claus, as we know him, and especially because of A Visit from St. Nicholas, started influencing portrayals of Father Christmas overseas. So these ideas are getting passed back and forth across the sea. Until about the midpoint of the 19th century, in London, Howitt's Journal of Literature and Popular Progress, they're talking about New Year's Eve in different nations, and they talk about Santa Claus, which is a sort of a Dutch tradition that was brought to America. And they say Santa Claus is no other than Pelle's Nickel of Germany, the good St. Nicholas of Russia. He arrives in Germany about a fortnight before Christmas, but as may be supposed from all the visits he has to pay there and the length of his voyage, he's not arrived in America until this eve. Oh yeah, bear in mind that there was reasons that people started pushing back St. Nicholas's visits to Christmas Eve. And one of the reasons they gave is because the guy had to cross the sea. He showed up on St. Nicholas Day in Europe, but then he got to get over the sea. But you started seeing portrayals of Father Christmas looking more and more like Santa Claus, like as the 19th century went on. By the 1890s, they were very blurred, mostly because of advertising. Because these images of Santa Claus were getting sort of sent around the globe at this point. You're going to hear a lot of people, and this is one thing I hate, people say, oh, well, Santa Claus looks like Santa Claus because of Coca-Cola ads. And it's not true. Not true at all. Santa Claus has always been in his red suit. I mean, he was also in, Santa Claus was shown in green sometimes, white sometimes, brown, especially Father Christmas. Father Christmas, any kind of earthy colors. But red was a real Santa Claus staple. Like, the red bishop's robes were a thing. The red hat was a thing. Trimmed in white, that was a thing. And also with Father Christmas. He wore red a lot of the time. And Thomas Nast drew a lot of pictures of Santa Claus, and his illustrations of Santa Claus kind of cemented that in the public imagination. The Coca-Cola thing did was it made... It sort of, because Coca-Cola was so powerful and they had advertising everywhere, that really just said, this is it. Like, this is the way it looks. Like, because Coca-Cola was everywhere. Like, the advertising was in every newspaper and billboard all over the world. Like, by that point, people were just like, all right, we get it. We get it. Santa Claus. I know I've been going on for a long time about this. If you want to look up more about the history of St. Nicholas, and the history of Father Christmas, and the history of Santa Claus, New York Public Library has a great archive online that you can visit. Just go to the New York Public Library, look up their like history, because so much of that is tied up in New York. There's a lot of archived newspapers online that have a lot of history of the Santa Claus characters throughout history. People wrote about this guy. Like, he was out there. Like, people were, even as it was happening, people were kind of fascinated by this. And the history of Father Christmas is just brilliant. What I find a little bit of a shame is that now Father Christmas and Santa Claus are literally just the same guy. Like, in dictionaries and folklore, they're just considered the same. Like, they've been permanently merged now. And I'm a little disappointed in that, because I love keeping them separate. So from a visit from St. Nicholas, a count of it from St. Nicholas, 1823, we have this poem that historically and permanently merged these two figures in the public imagination. Some people say that the Dutch origins of this are bunk, and that it was Washington Irving, actually, who made up a lot of the Dutch traditions in America just to make fun of the Dutch. There's not a lot of proof that he was actually doing that. He did write a lot of stuff about the Dutch in a very tongue-in-cheek manner, because people are jerks. But there's no proof that's what he was doing. I know that they say there's not a whole lot written down about Sinterklaas or the Sinterklaas traditions in America. The printed proof isn't there. But as we know from folklore, printed proof isn't the only kind of proof. Word of mouth. But we also know that Sinterklaas exists in Europe. So, I mean, there's that. Like, we know it came from somewhere. But in any case, a visit from St. Nicholas. So A Visit from St. Nicholas was published. It was popular. It kept getting republished. Unfortunately, nobody knew who wrote it. It was just this unknown guy. Oh, who wrote A Visit from St. Nicholas? Clement Clark Moore was kind of this snooty, goody two-shoes professor of Oriental and Greek literature, divinity and biblical learning at the General Theological Seminary of the Protestant Episcopal Church in New York City. He was kind of a jerk. He was very pro-slavery, very anti-Thomas Jefferson. He wrote articles like against Thomas Jefferson. Not that Thomas Jefferson was anti-slavery himself, but Clement Clark Moore really liked slavery. I don't know how else to put it. When New York got rid of slaves, he wasn't happy. A Visit from St. Nicholas is what we're talking about. It gets published, right? Like, anonymously. And so the legend goes that Moore wrote it, and then a friend of his sent it in. It's like, check out this pretty cool poem my buddy Clem wrote. And no one really knew who had written it, though. Like, no one claimed it until 1844, when Clement Clark Moore published it in a book of his poems. And his kids are like, yeah, he wrote this. He wrote this for us, and we liked it, and it's pretty cool that our dad, like, wrote this popular poem. But he hated it. Like, it's really weird. Like, he published it. He claimed authorship, but he also thought it was a bad poem. If he didn't write it, why would he claim it? Because he didn't like it. But he wanted to be known for it. People, the publisher and, like, all these other people were like, yeah, Clement Clark Moore wrote it. Like, we heard him. We've seen it. We heard him read it. We know that he wrote it. But as with Shakespeare, there's people who are like, we study the text. We study the handwriting. We think this other guy, Henry Livingston Jr., wrote it. And Henry Livingston Jr.'s families are like, oh, yeah, he definitely wrote it. But people go back and forth on this all the time. It's kind of a big controversy, kind of, but like Livingston never said he wrote it. His family did. You can't really trust like the spellings and things like that because like things change, like drafts, spellings change when they're sent off to printers. And it's pretty much agreed now that Clement Clark Moore wrote the poem. And I mean, that's really all we have to say about that. It's just one of the most famous American poems ever written. And it's so famous, in fact, that in 2013, the Berenstain Bears read it. Let's talk about the Berenstain Bears, Night Before Christmas. So in the story, the Berenstain Bears, Night Before Christmas, it's Christmas Eve. The bears are getting ready. They're hanging up their stockings. We got multicolored stockings. We got a tree. Again, this is Mike Berenstain's illustrations. The colors are popping. The house is detailed. There's a beautiful rug on the floor. Mama's wearing her vest because we no longer want to draw them dots. Honey's hanging out, eating cookies. Brother and sister are leaving out stuff for Santa. And everyone's getting ready to go to bed. So the kids want to watch. Okay, and I have a big problem here because the kids want to watch what is essentially a Three Stooges Christmas special. However, it is, of course, the Bear World version of the Three Stooges, known as the Nutty Bears. Who are the Nutty Bears? We've already established in the past that the Berenstain Bears version of the Three Stooges is known as the Bear Stooges. If anything else, it's the Three Bears. The Nutty Bears? I've never heard of the Nutty Bears. But the Nutty Bears meet Santa Claus is coming on. And Papa's like, I don't want to watch the Nutty Bears. And Mama's like, yeah, it's a little violent for Christmas because they just hit each other in the head. So let's read a book called A Visit from St. Nicholas. And they actually call it A Visit from St. Nicholas. Love it. The kids have never heard it before, which is kind of weird, but in any case. So Papa reads A Visit from St. Nicholas. It is highly edited, so it's much truncated. But we do, much like Mike Berenstain's illustrations for the Nutcracker, it's this sort of fantasy. We get this, like, illustration of the bear house. There's a closed door out of the mouse hole with do not disturb because the mice are asleep. We see sugar plums dancing. This is the craziest drawing I've ever seen in a Berenstain Bears book. The children are all sharing a bed, of course, and there's sugar plums dancing and they are hilarious. Papa wakes up, and of course he sees Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, coming through the sky. This is your traditional. He's flying through the air on his reindeer. There's not Donner and Blitzen. By the way, Donder and Blitzen. So kudos, Mike, for edging close to the original. I appreciate it. On Comet on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. And Santa Claus comes down the chimney. St. Nick comes down the chimney. He's got the cheeks. He's got the dimples. He's got the beard. No mustache. Love it. Because it just says the beard was on his chin. Did not say he had a full beard, like a full mustache. Just a beard. It's very like archaic. I like just the beard. It's cool on a St. Nicholas character. He shakes when he laughs like a bowl full of jelly, leaves the gifts, hops up the chimney, finger on his nose, and flies off into the sky. Happy Christmas to all a good night. Papa's like, how'd you like the book? And the kids are asleep. And they get put to bed, and then they go to sleep. And then that's it. And it ends with happy Christmas to all a good night. And you see the actual, like, St. Nicholas bear, Santa bear, flying off through the sky. And that's it. Like, there's literally nothing happened. It's not a story. It is just a retelling of the Night Before Christmas, of A Visit from St. Nicholas. You get these lovely shots. You get lovely illustrations, though. Okay, I'm going to go on record right now and say I love the way Mike Berenstain draws Santa bear flying through the sky. Mike has this attention to detail. He's a machine guy, right? Like, he's an animal guy. Like, he loves nitpicky details, and the way he draws St. Nicholas on his sleigh flying through the air is it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. The colors, and it's the color scheme of these books is very unlike any other bear books. I don't know how to describe the Christmas books, but they use a different palette, and it is striking. It makes them stand out as really solid Christmas books. And I mean, there's really nothing else to say. It's just the bears reading the book. There is a last shot, though, of the bear's treehouse at night. Mike's drawn a lot of random branches sticking out of the snow on the treehouse. I can't really describe it. It looks kooky, but I suppose that's the way it would look. Again, we've discussed the inner structure of the bear's house, and I have posited that it's actually like that top where the leaves is actually like a solid structure with with leaves on the outside to hide like the upper attic, and then the windows are attached to walls, but it just looks like a full tree. And then in the winter, they have to like change the outside manually to make it look like fallen leaves because the windows are there. Like, they're not just living on branches. And but the way that it's covered in snow, but bare branches are sticking out of the snow, leads me to believe this is a false exterior, okay? This is not a real tree. It's a false exterior. It's been modified. That's where the attic is. That's where the upstairs is. Otherwise, it just makes no sense. It makes no sense. Oh, but that's not what I was going to point out. What I was going to point out is that it is a beautiful picture. You get what it looks like, maybe it looks like Farmer Ben's place just beyond them. You get a couple of more, another house, like a farmhouse standing. And then way in the back, you get a completely different style of treehouse. I just love the way it looks. You see a bridge over the river. Everything's covered in snow. It's very silent. A gorgeous picture. This is the Berenstain Bears Night Before Christmas. It is available for sale. You can still buy it. It is not out of print by any means. Pick up a copy of it. I really enjoy it, and I really like A Visit from St. Nicholas. I really love Santa Claus and St. Nicholas, and learning about where this stuff comes from. It's so fascinating. It's so cool. Like, that this thing, here comes the point. In studying the Berenstain Bears, in learning about the Berenstain Bears, you learn that in reading all these books and talking to Mike and talking to like his assistants and reading the history of this book series, and you learn that there's so much more beneath the surface, something you take for granted. The Berenstain Bears, common children's characters. They've existed forever. We know what they are. They are mama, papa, sister, and brother, and they have the foibles and the adventures, and they learn a lesson. That's the Berenstain Bears. We know the ins and outs of them, but we don't, because there is so much history there. There is so much texture there. There's an evolution of characters. There's an evolution of design. There's an evolution of the appearance. There's an evolution of people's attitudes toward them, where they sit in popular culture, how we think about them, what other countries think about them, how we parody them, how we talk about them, what we do with the information that we learn from them and about them. That's where the Berenstain Bears sit in popular culture. There is the tip of the iceberg, and then there is the 90% that is under the water. And that's what I think of about the Berenstain Bears. And you gain this deeper appreciation for where they are now once you learn about where they came from. And I feel the same way about Santa Claus. To many people, he's a symbol of commercialism, of the sort of the distortion of what the holiday season is supposed to be about. But if you dig into the history of Santa Claus, into the history of Sinterklaas and Father Christmas, Père Noël, and all the other the Christkindl, the Christ child who took over for Sinterklaas when the churches split in the Protestant Reformation, and they were like, it's not Sinterklaas who delivers the presents, it's the baby Jesus. Jesus came back as a baby and he delivers the presents. We're gonna call him Christ Kind, and he has the Christ Kindles that come with him, and people are like, Kris Kringle? Well, what is that? I guess that's another name for Santa Claus. And so you suddenly have Kris Kringle in the picture, and it's crazy and wacky. It's all these traditions, religious, pagan, pre-Christian, just general help us, we're stuck in the middle of nowhere in the middle of winter traditions. Things that became Halloween in some parts of the world, Thanksgiving in other parts of the world, Yule celebrations in other parts of the world, that gave us songs and dances and merriment and this general sense that at the heart, in the bottom of our hearts, at the end of the day, everything is... people are good. Like, there's more good in the world than there is bad. There's a lot of bad people out there, and they are trying to do bad things, and they are trying to take control of us and our hearts. But at the bottom, you find that most people are good. And that, to me, is what Father Christmas and all of this symbolizes. It symbolizes the inherent decency of people. The fact that for hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of years, we have celebrated this mythological character who comes out of the woods to simply give of himself, to give to people. And that is cool. And that is a neat thing. No matter what you celebrate or if you celebrate, just giving something to another person, to see their face change at the end of the day, to see someone smile because you just did something nice for them, that's literally all it's about. That's all it's about. And that's what A Visit from St. Nicholas is about. Guy comes to your house just to say, I want you to feel happy. Just for like, just even if just for this morning, I want you to feel happy. I want you to wake up and smile at something. And here, smile because this is something you didn't have in your life before, and now it's here. And then you look up and you're with people who are smiling right along with you. To me, that is the spirit of the season. Whatever your background, whatever you celebrate, it doesn't matter. This period in the world is here. From all cultures, they all have this thing where they celebrate just, hey, we are here and we're not going anywhere. And I love it. I love it so much. And I love the Santa and I love the Kringle and I love all of it. That is the Berenstain Bears Night Before Christmas by Mike Berenstain. You can buy it online, wherever you buy books. Pick up a copy. It looks good on a bookshelf. It's good to read to little kids. It's not a religious one. It's just a solid little reading of the poem. And do your own research. Figure out more about where things come from, because it makes you a more interesting person. It makes you a happier person. And it gives texture to life. If you don't want to do it, don't do it if it doesn't make you happy. Makes me happy, and I love to blab about it on this year's show called Deep in Bear Country. My name is Phil Gonzalez. You can find me at berenstainbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find me on Twitter at bstainbearcast. Please go to patreon.com/deepinbearcountry. Throw a few dollars my way. I'm working on a project right now that might cost a little money. It is Deep in Bear Country related, and I am trying to work out the odds and ends of it. I will update more as I know more, as I develop. But I'll just say right now, it is going to be performed, and it is going to be in front of people. So any backing on it I can get, I'd really appreciate. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week with more holiday goodness, and I will see all of you next time deep in.